This is the Cultural Fluency Podcast with Angel Preto, the French coach. That is me. And today in episode number 20, I am with Stone G, who is an autistic combat veteran and entrepreneur focused on the health industry for holistic client and patient outcomes. So welcome, Stone. You are signing in
Hi,
from
thank
Australia.
You. Yes. It's a bit late here, but I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Can you introduce yourself a bit further for the people who are listening?
Sure. That's always a challenge for me because I've done so many things, which brings into question what is identity and how do I want to show up in the world? Right. And I, without being weird, the best way for me to introduce myself is I, in this moment, and being an embodiment of love. And of course, there's a lot of history associated with that.
Right.
But that's my stand for right now. So thank you.
So yes, thank you very much. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do on a daily basis?
Sure. Well, I have the easiest way to understand it is it's a massage practice.
Mm-hmm.
But I integrate counseling, hypnotherapy, coaching, and all of those things are to support my clients to go into a trance. And then Lomi Lomi, which is a Polynesian bodywork modality. And I include reflexology and a few other modalities. The basic premise of each of these things is to support the client to become more vulnerable and fully self-expressed. And I guess from a physiological perspective, to rewrite their peripheral nervous system, their mapping. So when the human body is able to come from peace, there are better health outcomes with that.
Okay. Thank you for that definition. You have said so many things. I was writing like crazy. I was like, oh, I want to ask about this. I want to ask about that. Okay. Can we start perhaps with what kind of clients do you work with? Who are the people that
sure.
you help?
Sure. Primarily I work with women, and mm-hmm. that's because it's easier for them to understand the question that they may have about life. And I contrast that with men. And these are, I promise, they're just generalizations. It's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. Men will tend to look at an issue and say, okay, I need to fix it. It's very much like Western medicine. What is the
right.
symptom? I'm going to deal with it. Whereas women will communicate in three dimensions, and they tend to go to the cause, and they might be self-reflective and look inward. And so this service is very much about emotions and one's internal story. And Western society doesn't historically make that available to men, or men don't tend to embrace it. So,
so
that,
they're
that's
all
who I
to
tend
reach.
To support. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
They're not my market. Yeah, women are more likely to be open to having such a conversation and being speculative.
Right. Do they have any particular pathologies that you mostly deal with, or any particular situations that you have to resolve?
Well, it's not a pathology. It's more a question.
Uh-huh.
We, as human beings, we tend to tell a story, and
right.
that story gets played out over and over in our life. For instance, as a child, if there's a childhood incident, a child might say, well, because this incident happened, and that's the factual part, they'll give it a meaning. And then
mm-hmm.
that meaning and the fact, they become collapsed, and then that becomes their story for the rest of their life. And a lot of people are not privy to, they don't understand what the story is that's running in life. For instance, if someone has a story where they say, I am unloved, if they go into a relationship, they're going to be trying to prove that this person doesn't love them, which is a recipe for disaster.
Right.
And what if you have two people that are telling this secret internal story? So these two people are not showing up, connecting with one another. They're interacting with a mask, and the stories are interacting, and neither one of them understands why they're not able to connect. So Lomi Lomi is I'm biased when I say this, it's an excellent tool for being able to uncover these stories and illuminate absolute truth.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit more about Lomi Lomi? I'll confess that I did not know about it before I did the research for this episode. I have absolutely no idea.
Sure,
other than
sure.
what I read on Wikipedia in 5 minutes.
Yes, it's a, as I mentioned before, it's a Hawaiian bodywork modality. Mm-hmm. And in antiquities, it was used for to bring tribes together. If there's a conflict, let's share a Lomi Lomi. And there are other applications. There are medicinal applications. There are also applications in martial arts, so as a defensive practice. So it's a way of life, and the way of life, the philosophy is through aloha, which suggests that there is one consciousness, one organism, from which we all come from, and we are all moving in. So as a way of making that more tangible, you and I are not separate, even though we may
literally be on each
say,
side
oh,
of the planet right now.
Yeah.
But...
yeah. But we are the same energy, the same blah, 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 blah. And so if I can get that, philosophically, intellectually, if I can feel that, then it means my interaction with you is not other. My interaction with you is self, and which means I'm compelled to nurture you, to love you, to support you, and to stand for you.
Right. So your practice really helps people support their relationship and also themselves, which is
correct.
Not really two different things. It's one and the same.
Yes. Yes,
so
yes.
That,
It's a place. It's a place to stand.
Very high level, right? I don't know
Yes.
How much. I mean, I know that the people who listen to this podcast already have some awareness of those topics, so it's probably not going to be too out there for them. But still, for some people, it will be extremely out there. I know that you've also written about relationships. You wrote an article that is called "The Three Pillars of Effective, Exponentially Expanding Loving Relationships."
Yes,
that sounds
yes.
much more grounded in the Western mind, which is like, wait, like how do I do this, like concretely, like the three steps, the three pillars, the three, right?
Yes.
So can you share
yes.
first a bit about that to like connect the wagon for the Western mind?
Sure. Yeah, that's so the three pillars are physicality, attraction, and then there's the spiritual body. What are our philosophies? What are our belief systems? How are we relating to one another?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third is cognitive. It's what are our choices in the way that we're communicating? And
so
an
physicality.
easy way.
Wait, I'm trying to remember. Physicality. The last one is cognitive. The one in the middle was
spiritual.
Okay, are we speaking
yes.
here just about romantic relationships or about any relationships?
Well, in the article I wrote about romantic relationships,
mm-hmm.
and it can be mapped to, well, actually it shouldn't be mapped to any relationship, but we can talk about that as we can create a map for that as well.
Okay.
The reason why this is significant is because whether we're talking about monogamous or polyamorous or any of the variations thereof, relationships are analogous or can be analogous to the harmony that nature has.
Right.
Nature thrives because of harmony, and it doesn't have morality attached to how it thrives. Whereas human beings make up meanings, and sometimes these meanings are the opposite of what it's going to take for them to thrive. So in the example of those three pillars, what's available for Western culture? Well, Western culture is not going to last forever. And if we look at the tenets of Western culture, it's not something that's appropriate for longevity. There's no, we don't have any evidence for that. So I can talk about these attributes as they are, but it's difficult for the Western mind to relate to them, because as human beings, we are not Western culture. We are not a Western mind. We are right. Human beings, and we're made from love energy.
Yes.
So what a human being can do is, if they were to take, and this is merely a suggestion, they can do whatever they want, but from Aloha, if they were to take love as a filter, and that's not saying that love is this way or that way, love is everything. Mm-hmm. If they take love as a filter, and I'll give another way of rather than a filter, we can say the highest intention. So if I'm having a conversation with someone and there's a disagreement, if there's an opportunity for me to pause and ask, what is our highest intention in this conversation? Not like trying to have a go at them, but asking, what do you really want out of this conversation? What is the highest thing that you want? Whatever that is, I'm there with you. I'm here to support you with that. From a romantic context, wow. Okay, so instead of intimacy being performative, it's connecting. And by performative, I'm talking about a lot of people, the way intimacy is talked about is talked about like, okay, I need to get you to do something. I need to get you to have this thing, because if I can get you to have this experience, then that validates me as a human being. Not, we're not talking about that. That's not, that's the ego. From a cognitive perspective, the cognitive connection, they don't necessarily need to have the same values, but they want to have an agreement whereby, for instance, I might have an agreement with you that I'm really curious about what's interesting to you, and I'm going to be a stand for you to experience what you need to be fulfilled. That's cognitively. Spiritually, we may have practices. For instance, prayer,
right?
Which people will engage in intimacy, physical intimacy, but they might not pray together. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting who they pray to. It may be an affirmation that they're, but it's so intimate. And so being able to develop this practice of being able to come together in all these different dimensions really solidifies a relationship. And it's analogous to nature. And if someone wants to thrive, why wouldn't they do it? People spend a lot of time, they'll research where they're going to go to university. They'll research what car they're going to buy, what house they're going to buy, how they can make more money. But how many people take time to focus on the effectiveness and the harmony of their relationship? And the our relationships are what contribute to our longevity, not the university we go to, not any of these other things.
Yes, the relationships are infinitely more important than any of the things you have quoted for well-being and generally how enjoyable your life is.
That's right. So I trust that that addresses the question. I kind of went.
I believe it does. I believe it does. It's interesting that you say, so you're doing this kind of work mostly with women. I'm guessing some of these women at least are in relationship with men. How does that work if you have only one half of the couple that is aware of these kind of things?
Well, it's interesting with some of the women that I work with, and I'd say over 50% of them are married. I usually get a call from a partner who is thanking me for what's the coaching and the counseling that they're receiving from that their spouse is receiving, because they say, oh, I'm learning so much.
So in that case, the partner is frequently a man.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes, usually. I haven't had an occasion to work with polyamorous relationships as of yet, but I'm very open to all of these things. What makes counseling effective is someone's ability to listen and unconditional positive regard for the person that they're working with, really being present with them, accepting them for who they are, and validating it, validating their existence. So that, you know, that's a very broad and very general offering, but it's essential. And when I've done research to find out what other kind of counselors and therapists are out there, a vast majority of them have a religious focus, and sometimes religion will exclude other lifestyles, so marginalized lifestyles. So I'm not a fan of that. I think that
I understand that your approach is bent on including, not excluding, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yes. And so you told me you're also going to school. You said to be a counselor, even though you're already a counselor. So you're studying psychology right now?
As of next year, I'll be studying psychology science and clinical exercise science.
Right. So this sounds like you'll be bringing a completely different approach into your life.
Yeah, it's an attempt to add more rigor to my practice. So I've done a lot of study in multiple different areas. I have two certifications in hypnotherapy. I'm an NLP trainer, so on and so forth. And I'm interested in the scientific method when it comes to creating strategies for holistic outcomes. And that's a lot of jargon, but I'll break it down a little bit.
Right.
With autistic people. So I'm autistic, and I have probably six or seven other co-occurring conditions. I'll share an actual scenario. So I was hospitalized because I have epilepsy. And I was also on, let's see, there was another medic. Oh, I was on a medication for depression, but the medication for depression conflicted with the epilepsy. And
Right.
so when I was in ER, because I was I had a seizure, they were saying, "Oh yeah, you need to take this other medication because it's on your chart." And I said, "Well, I can't take that anymore because it will complicate epilepsy."
Right.
And the doctor says, "Well, I don't care about your epilepsy because I am this kind of doctor, and
Right.
you need to."
Circling back to what you said at the beginning, which is, okay, what is the symptom? Let's address that, which is obviously a recipe for disaster.
Yes. And so I refused, and they made me sign a letter saying I'm refusing medical care and all this other stuff. But I needed to do that because I knew what the outcome was going to be.
So you knew more than the doctor in that situation, which unfortunately is terribly frequent in life, and particularly in the life of autistic people. And don't I know about that?
Yes.
So anyway,
yes.
what happened
And,
next?
well, I decided that I didn't want that type of experience anymore. So I started creating something called an MDT, which is a multidisciplinary team.
Right.
And it's a team of various health practitioners that are usually organized by either a social worker or an occupational therapist. And so by meeting with each one of these practitioners, they collaborate on best practices for my care. And so that's
right.
a Western medicine strategy that's available, but it's not always accessible. Here
It's
in
the first
Australia,
time I'm hearing about that.
Yeah, so it's something that's available here in Australia. I think it can be available in the US if someone has enough resources. Here in Australia, we have something called the National Disability Insurance Scheme, which provides funding for people with lifelong disabilities. So that's how it's been able to, that's how I've organized it for myself. And it has been a huge learning experience. But that's the kind of services that I've been providing for my clients for past decade, is this more holistic perspective. So it's not about me delivering the service. It's me listening to some of the things that they have concerns about. And if I'm not the right person to support them, then I have a directory of practitioners that are potentially able to fill in the gap.
Right. That sounds really helpful. So since you're already doing that, what is your intent with studying psychology further or more from a Western lens?
Well, it's to bring together, so there's traditional medicine, and I've studied acupuncture as well, and then there's Western medicine.
Right.
And having evidence-based science is quite useful. It's if someone breaks their leg, that's an acute situation where they really need to get that addressed. There are a lot of other conditions that could be psychosocial, and which is to say that sometimes if someone has a particular belief system about themselves that is not in alignment with nature, which is not harmonious with love, with nature, it can cause problems in the body, and that can impact the way the nervous system grows.
Right.
So, and which is all very well documented. This is evidence-based. These are evidence-based situations that I'm referring to. So I'm very interested in that, because the way we think, and so there's two things. There's emotions. Emotions are things that we experience in our body, which is distinct with feelings. Feelings is the meaning that we give to the emotions that we feel in our body.
Okay.
Now, the thoughts that we have, which is associated with the feelings, because the feelings are a meaning of the emotion that we're experiencing in our body, these are choices. And the more we focus on a particular choice, the more our brain, the more our senses are looking for evidence of that story that we're telling.
Right.
So if I'm telling a story that my environment is not safe, and so I'm not going to go outside, I'm going to look for evidence of that. Or if I say, I don't know, I can make up any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
There are even psychosocial examples of epilepsy. So people who have anxiety
somehow manage to give themselves epilepsy.
But they can produce symptoms of epilepsy where their brain shuts down.
Okay.
Because they're experiencing anxiety, they have a panic attack, depression, so on and so forth. It's really quite remarkable the research that's been done in this area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to circle back to something you said earlier, because we haven't explored that branch. You said at the beginning that vulnerability was very important in your practice. And that's a topic I would like you to speak on, because it's become fashionable in recent years in certain parts of the West. There's Brené Brown, who's spoken about it quite extensively. And at some point, it became a really fashionable topic. I don't think it is as fashionable now as it was. The fad died out. Because people don't really get it. But can you tell us a little bit how vulnerability, what role it plays in your approach?
Well, think about, just from the perspective of an analogy, think about an experience that you may have had with another provider. Say you go to the store and you're trying to get a suit. Maybe you go to one store and they say, hey, just check that out on the rack, and they don't intend to. Contrast that by going to another store, and the person there is very attentive. They're asking, oh, okay, what is the occasion for the suit? And they're really diving in because they want to be of service.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you didn't want to say anything, but you say, hey, you know what? Actually, I need this for a funeral. I don't really want to go because the person, blah, 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 they didn't treat me well, but I have to go because I'm expected to go. Now the person, because they have been so interested in you, because they're trying to make a difference to your life, now they're connected.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're looking for opportunities to contribute to me. To you more. Now, remember that other example we talked about where they just said, hey, there's some suits on the rack over there, and you're just left to your. Now, let's take that same or a similar analogy and look at what happens in a one-on-one relationship, however that goes. Maybe there's one to many or however.
Mm-hmm.
When you're with someone who doesn't disclose, who doesn't share their heart, who doesn't open themselves up, it's difficult. It's hurtful. Imagine a baby. This is the final example. Imagine a baby, a newborn. They want closeness with their mother. They want the milk. They want that body heat, the smell that they remember, their mother. Children who don't have that outcome usually have a higher than average ACE score. ACE is the adverse childhood experience.
Mm-hmm.
And higher ACE scores are associated with higher mobility, morbidity rates.
Right.
So vulnerability is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
for longevity. It's
Right.
necessary for
For connection.
connection. Exactly. And we as human beings, without connection, well, what are we?
Right.
How are we able to formulate our identity? Our transformation and our expansion as human beings is directly proportional to the connection that we have with those that are around us, those in our community. And
right.
that connection has an ingredient of vulnerability.
Right. I think I understand. The example that you gave with the shops is kind of wild for me because I'm living in Europe and we don't have people who care to provide customer service. It's an extremely rare experience. I think you'd have to go to a very special shop to experience anything remotely like that. But I think I get it. I think you made that very clear. So thank you very much. We're coming to the end of this podcast. Where can people find you?
They can find me through my site, which is lomigoldcoast.com, and it has all of my socials there. That's the most effective way to do it.
All right.
To do that.
So we'll put that in the show notes. And any last words that you would like to leave our audience with? We will, of course, continue this conversation or have a second conversation on your podcast. But
sure.
For now, what would you like to leave
well,
our listeners
yeah, what
with?
I'd like to impart with people, whether they're interacting or engaging with autistic people or not, start to consider acceptance and inclusion. And if those words are too big because there's too many syllables, start to consider love. What is the most loving thought and stand that I can take for interacting with this person that's in front of me right now, who is not actually other? This person is me.
Right. Right. What is the most loving thought that I can stand? Perfect. That is an amazing way of concluding this episode. So thank you, Stone, so much for joining me today. And thank you for listening to this episode until the end. Please leave a review or a comment, as this will help others find the podcast and help us get more amazing guests like Stone. And see you next time.
All right.